Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, Vince Van Patten, co-host with Mike Sexton of the World Poker Tour, the most successful poker TV show in history, now in its 10th season. Vince will join us today live from the WPT event at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Also, we will talk about some big breaking news about the Department of Justice cracking down again on Full Tilt Poker, and our poker coach John Kim will be here to give you a lesson on dunk betting. Hello, I am Paul Harrah, sitting at the feature table in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot is up close to $64,000. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis, how are you?
I'm doing great. My email's been flooded this morning, though.
Yeah, I'm sure it has, and we'll get to that story in a second. But first, you played in a big charity event this weekend.
I did, with Brad Garrett. We had one at the Tropicana. They're going through new renovations and such. They spent about, I think, $150 million down there. They're going to spend at least that much more. Brand new poker room, brand new rooms, a whole new setup on the outside of it. It's under new ownership down there. I met and talked with them. They're really trying to jazz it up. And I got to go down there and play in a charity benefit with Brad Garrett, and he brought along a few of his friends, people like Ray Romano and Jason Alexander. Jose Canseco was down there. Annie Duke was down there. Kevin Nealon was there. There was a whole mess of people. We had some fun.
I heard that Terry Hatcher and Cheryl Hines from Curb Your Enthusiasm were there as well. Were you lucky enough to be at a table with either of them?
No, I sat down, looked to my left, and I see Jamie Gohl. What's with this? I don't want Jamie sitting next to Mike. I want, you know, Cheryl sitting there or Terry Hatcher or something. You know, no offense, Jamie, but, you know, give me a break.
Could have been worse. You could have had Jerry Tarkanian, the former coach of the UNLV Running Rebels there. I know he was in that tournament. You didn't happen to play with him, did you?
I did not. No, you know, people, some of them I played before. Some friends of mine showed up over there and helped the cause. Wow, gosh, what is the name? It's Maximus. It's to help families with kids. Brad has done this for a number of years. Every year they get 30, 40, 50 different families that have gone through hard times for one reason or another, and they help them out. They help make sure that they've got food on the plate, and the kids have clothes, and they can go to school, and, you know, just there's always a situation out there. A lot of times not even of the making of the family. It's just has happened. And he's donated a ton of time and energy and money to making this happen and to helping others. And kudos to Brad. He does a great job that way. So
terrific.
It was excellent.
All right, let's talk about the big story of the day. This is breaking news that has just happened in the last couple of hours. The U.S. Department of Justice, which cracked down on online poker in the form of Poker Stars and Full Tilt and Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet, back on April 15th, it has been 5 months since then. Today, they amended their civil complaint to include new allegations against Howard Lederer, Chris Ferguson, and Rafe First, what they call the insider defendants of Full Tilt Poker. It accuses them of committing money laundering, along with Ray Bitar, the CEO of that company. Says that not only did they engage in the operation of an unlawful gambling business and bank fraud and wire fraud and money laundering, but also defrauded their players by misrepresenting that funds deposited into their online accounts were secure and segregated from operating funds. We have talked about this before being the big problem. While Poker Stars did keep separate secure accounts and was able to know who had what amount of money on the site, so that they could then refund it whenever anybody wanted their money, and they have to all American players. Full Tilt did not do the same thing, but what they add in this complaint is that at the same time, Full Tilt was using those player funds to pay out hundreds of millions of dollars to Full Tilt owners. In fact, a number approaching $444 million $1,000 was paid out from April of 2007 until April of this year. Ray Bitar, the CEO, got at least $41 million, $34 in ownership distribution, $6.5 in profit sharing. Howard Lederer received $42 million, including approximately $37 in ownership distributions and $4 million in profit sharing payments. Chris Jesus Ferguson was allocated approximately $85 million in distributions. The records that the DOJ has say approximately $25 million of it was actually transferred to Ferguson's personal accounts, with the remaining balance characterized as owed to him. And Rafe First, who frankly I didn't even know that he was involved in this, he got almost $12 million, $11.7 million in distributions, and the other approximately 19 other owners of Tiltware, which is the company that was at the heart of Full Tilt Poker, received the remainder of the approximately $444 million that was distributed, including one who they call Player Owner One, who got at least $40 million in distributions. And there's speculation now that perhaps that's Phil Ivey. It could be any of the other players. Remember that the Full Tilt pros were some of the top players in the world, and people whose names you would recognize, like Jennifer Harmon and Phil Gordon and Andy Block and Eric Lindgren and on and on and on and on. So the question now is, what does this mean? Before we get some legal analysis on this, Dennis, are you shocked by these developments today?
I don't know about shocked. I've been shocked over the last 3 months as I continue to find out information on a lot of this. I did not know until I read today that the latest distribution of funds they did was April 1st, right before they did that they also allocated another $10 million out to the different owners in that. Even though there was a shortage of funds, they knew there was a desperate shortage of funds, they were still paying out the owners on a monthly basis of about $10 million, and they did that right up to and including April 1st. I didn't realize that the extent of the loans that were given to the, quote, team pro, the Full Tilt pros that were there. There's a number there in the millions that's been loaned out to other ones. That was actually Full Tilt, my understanding, taking depository money and loaning it to some of their pros to play with. That, to me, I was unaware of. I also knew about the discrepancy of funds from the processors and the collection of it, but the figures that I had heard were more like 60 to 70 million. There was a shortage from what Full Tilt had credited to players' accounts and had been unable to process and take out of people's bank accounts. I'll explain that more in a second. According to this indictment, it's $130 million that was a shortfall there. What Full Tilt was doing was basically you put in an application and you say, I want to put $1,000 on Full Tilt, and here's my bank information. Full Tilt would immediately credit you that $1,000, and you could start playing with it that day. However, they had a problem with the processors. They had a problem with finding a way to get the money out of your account and into Full Tilt. And that had been going on for a number of months and had been escalating in the last few months. And according to this indictment, it's a $130 million shortfall. But Full Tilt had put this phantom money into people's accounts and had never collected it from anybody. So there's a ton of players out there that were playing on, I don't know what you want to call it, phantom money, depositors' money, I don't know. I didn't realize the extent of that whatsoever. This is bad.
Yeah.
That's all I see no upside to any of this.
And that part of the story, I've actually heard from a couple of players who would put $300, $500, $800 on Full Tilt and never have it taken out of their bank account.
Correct.
One woman said to me, you know, I kind of feel a little bit guilty about this. I don't know what I should do about it. And I told her, you know, after Black Friday, it's a moot point. This was bad business practice by Full Tilt Poker. Once you got to the point where you had tens of millions of dollars that you couldn't collect, which people were playing with, creating rake with, and possibly losing to other players, what happened when those other players won that money from you? and then wanted to withdraw it before Black Friday. They could have done that. And now you have to give them money that you don't have. And so the shortfall was so tremendous, yet Full Tilt continued to tell players, don't worry, despite this discrepancy, your money is safe and secure and it's available. And they continued making those payments to their owners slash pros, as you said, for $10 million a month. They continued accepting player funds even from outside the United States after Black Friday. They owed $300 million to people at a time when Howard Lederer, in June of this year, told the others at Full Tilt Poker that they only had about $6 million left in the company coffers, and yet they owed $300 million worldwide, half of that in the United States, and yet they kept taking international money because after Black Friday, Full Tilt did continue to operate in Europe and in other markets. They could not pay their players back, and yet they were, A, accepting new money, and B, allowing existing players with money in their accounts to play and create rake for the company. This is just greed upon greed upon greed, and the problem here that really is the bottom line here, this was a money-printing machine. If run correctly, online poker sites, PokerStars is a perfect example, can create huge amounts of wealth for the people who own it and are behind the scenes. If you run it right, it's a license to print money. But these people saw it as a license to take money from other people. And where the reason we're making a big deal about this today is not just because the U.S. attorney called them not a legitimate poker company, but a global Ponzi scheme. That's a direct quote from Preet Bharara, who is the U.S. attorney of the Southern District of New York. The bottom line here is, if you're a Full Tilt player who had money on there and you were hoping to get it back, I think today is the day you have to say, I'll never see that money again.
Unfortunately, I don't see any other alternative. And again, we'll have Josh on here in a minute, and we can ask him some of the potential that can happen here. But this money was distributed. The $130 million Phantom money, how can you ever collect that? That's money just gone.
Yep.
So you have that shortfall for sure. The other unnamed 19 players out there, the loans that Full Tilt made to these players, the layer upon layer upon layer, and none of them are good.
None. All right, let's bring Josh on here. Josh Schindler, the poker lawyer who we've called upon for legal advice and analysis many times on this show, joins us again here today. Hi, Josh, how are you?
How are the two of you?
We're doing fine. Now, this is not a you explain this to me, because originally we had 11 indictments here, which was a criminal complaint. As I understand it, this is a civil lawsuit that's amended to the criminal complaint. Does this mean that these people, Howard Lederer, Chris Ferguson, and Rafe First, are now looking at jail time?
Now, let me explain it, because what was lost a little bit relative to the Black Friday indictments were, there are indictments, and let's be clear about this, there are two parallel things that are going on. The courts generally, and I'm really limiting the discussion, there are the criminal courts where you are typically, your penalties include probation or jail time or things of the like, home confinement. But the criminal courts can also impose fines on you. There are also civil complaints, and these are complaints that are brought either under the laws of the United States, state laws, which has diversity jurisdiction. There are forfeiture proceedings, which take place in the criminal context and the civil context. And what happened here was, when Black Friday hit, there was a lot of discussions about the 11 indictments that came down. What really got lost was a companion civil lawsuit that was brought, which, by the way, incidentally referred to the indictments. in which it seeked, among other things, forfeitures of money and money judgments in the billions, for example, against PokerStars for $1.5 billion. So it was really going on in parallel, but the focus was on the indictments because those are the exciting things, not the money judgment.
Okay.
And so that's the first thing we have to do is we have to talk about two separate independent proceedings that are going on. And this appears on its face to be an amendment to the indictment that was brought on Black Friday as well. Does that
okay.
help clarify it a little bit for you?
Well, it does, but I'm curious what can happen to Chris Jesus Ferguson and Howard the Professor Letterer and Rafe First, who are the people who are specifically named in this amendment here?
Well, the first thing is, that speaking simply, Paul, about this amendment to the civil procedure, basically the U.S. government is saying, hey, we want you to forfeit all of the money that you got from the operation of Full Tilt Poker. And that includes trying to freeze all of their assets to try to recoup this hundreds of millions of dollars. And remember, it's just a civil complaint. And while we are all furious, I think, and everybody would agree, that this money was not promptly returned, there is nothing to suggest that everything that the government says in this document is true. It's simply allegations that are made against Full Tilt, the purpose of which is to recoup these hundreds of millions of dollars for the players. So, you know, I start with that.
Let me just stop you right there, because that's a very important point there. If the United States government does freeze these assets and is eventually able to gain forfeiture of them and seize these assets, which I guess could include both money and property, once they do that, does the Department of Justice then distribute that money to players who had Full Tilt accounts?
Well, and that's an interesting question. That will be up to the Department of Justice to decide what to do with the money they've grabbed. Now, I will tell you, based on the PokerStars example, it appears that the Department of Justice, and in particular the U.S. attorneys from the Southern District of New York, is very interested in getting player funds back. And the reason I say that is look at the PokerStars example. First of all, what happened with PokerStars, if you think about it, was extraordinary. Not only did you have individuals from PokerStars under indictment, but they were able to approach the government and institute a procedure within a matter of weeks, and maybe it took 6 weeks or 8 weeks to finalize, to return, what was it, Paul, $500 million or something like that? I don't remember the exact amount.
It wasn't that many, but to the U.S. players, it was in a tune of well over $100 million. Nobody knows the exact figure. It could have easily been $200 million that they returned to the U.S. players. Basically, what? Any and everyone who had an account in the U.S., had their money available, all they had to do was request it.
And that's, so what that was is a signal from the Southern District of New York, the U.S. Attorney in the Southern District, that he understood that one of his responsibilities, in addition to pursuing both the indictments and the civil cases, was to protect the United States citizens by getting their money back. So from that example, it leads me to believe that if there is money which the U.S. attorney from the Southern District of New York gets back, that at some point there will be a mechanism dictated by the court to try to get money back to players who lost money. Now, there's something very interesting, by the way, about this, and I did not know the level of funds that were quote-unquote phantom funds. And one of the things that I think over time will be interesting is, in addition to this civil case going on, I'm sure that both you, Paul, and Dennis are aware that there are a lot of several class actions that have been filed against Full Tilt. The question now is, given the amount of money that has been disclosed as quote-unquote phantom money, will someone be charged, whether it'll be the, I don't think it'll be the Department of Justice, but it may be a class action lawyer, to try to go against those people who had quote-unquote phantom funds online? In other words, if I put $5,000 into an account and it was never withdrawn and I played that down to $2,500, shouldn't I be, one would argue, I should be responsible to put $2,500 back in the kitty. Well, we're not talking $2,500 from one person. We're talking $130 million. So the next question is, kind of the Department of Justice going to take the lead on that, or is a class action lawyer going to take the lead on that, or some other lawyer?
This just gets more and more levels on it. It's just getting ridiculous. Quick question for you also, Josh. The cost and expense, because there is a ton of this involved from the DOJ. Aren't those funds and aren't those costs going to be deducted from any fines, any monetary recovery they make before the money is distributed to the players?
Well, that's an interesting question. There are some provisions which would allow for certain monies to be reimbursed to the federal government, but I can't tell you the scope of those. But, you know, I want to come back for a minute, Dennis, to the question that was raised by Paul. Don't forget that, remember that the Black Friday indictments, that the grand jury had returned those indictments many, many months before they were made public. So there is nothing to suggest that either that there are unsealed indictments meaning that they haven't been made public, or that there is a grand jury either in the Southern District of New York or someone else who is hearing testimony to try to determine whether there should be additional indictments related to what happened with Full Tilt. I would suggest that given that this has been called a quote-unquote Ponzi scheme by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, it would seem to beg the question, are there unsealed indictments, or is a grand jury looking into other indictments? That would not surprise me to find out in the next 6 months. And frankly, I've been expecting this since April. Are there going to be other people who are indicted relative to what happened?
Last question for you, Josh. When the government goes after the money from Ferguson and Lederer and First and perhaps the other people who were Full Tilt, Team Full Tilt as it's called, can they go after money that they may have in foreign bank accounts or only in the U.S.?
Well, no. They can try to trace the money. For example, you know, on Madoff, they reached as far as they can possibly reach. So they absolutely have resources to try to go overseas. They're not restricted to just what happens in the United States. For example, they can go try to go to some Swiss bank accounts and seize the bank accounts. So I suspect that the United States government, if it gets an order of forfeiture or it gets the authority to freeze assets, that the United States government is going to try to find assets wherever they are. Now, again, I don't know where these guys are today. I don't know where Jesus Ferguson is. I don't know where Howard is. I don't know where any of the Full Tilt people are. But I suspect at this point they've got to be concerned about not just what happened today, but what's going to happen in the days, weeks, months to come relative to the criminal side of things.
All right, Dennis, any other legal stuff before we let Josh go?
Yeah, I've got actually to make a point just to reinforce what Josh is saying there. They've already frozen bank accounts in other countries. They did that back in April 15th. In fact, a couple of PokerStars accounts in other countries have been released since then because of the cooperation that PokerStars has done. My question is this, Josh, just on another level, to even make this more confusing. What happens if either prior to April 15th or even after April 15th, you were playing online and won one of their major tournaments and got a payout? Can they come against you? If you won on April 18th, $100,000 on Full Tilt, can they come at you for that money?
Well, it's an interesting question. I've always taken the position that the act in and of itself of playing poker online, that I felt that the law was fundamentally unclear with this. But I suspect, and we're aware of other cases throughout the United States where players have been the target. And to answer your question, I don't think anyone today knows what machinations this beast is going to take, whether the money was earned after April 15th or before April 15th. This is extremely complex area. It'll be litigated both by the Department of Justice, both on the civil side and the criminal side. There are private attorneys that are going to get involved, and they're going to try to find a way to massage laws or to find existing laws to try to find money wherever they can. This is a great deal of money. Over, I think Paul said, $360 million that is suddenly gone. Now, hopefully, to the extent that they get a forfeiture or they get a judgment against Howard Lederer, and by the way, this is premature, but hopefully they'll get after real property and then we'll see a lot of this $360 million. I do want to close with one thing. I don't think we should lose sight of what PokerStars did. In the midst of all this, I really have, and again, I'm a little biased because I like PokerStars, and I think they're, are they still a sponsor of yours, Paul and Dennis? But look at what PokerStars did. It is a legitimate business that kept money held in trust for the benefit of their players. And it'll be interesting in the months, weeks and months to come to see what happens, and I'll be watching this story along with the two of you.
All right, Josh, thanks very much. To clarify, PokerStars is no longer a sponsor of the show, although, as Dennis explained last week on the final table, he does still have some association with them. That's Josh Schindler, the attorney who we call on for advice and analysis quite often here on the final table. One last question before we have to go to a break here, Dennis. Chris Jesus Ferguson owned 19.2% of Tiltware, which is the company behind the scenes of Full Tilt Poker. Howard Lederer owned 8.6%. Ray Buttar owned 7.8%. Rafe First owned 2.6%. And then you've got the 19 other pro/owners. You know, Ferguson was the chairman of the board. Buttar and Lederer were the two managing members. Buttar was the CEO of Full Tilt Poker. With this new information that we've learned from the Department of Justice, do these guys go to the level of Russ Hamilton, who, of course, is the evil guy at the heart of the Ultimate Bet scandal from several years ago? Do they become poker pariahs like Russ?
I don't put them on the same level. Not me, personally. What Russ did was just out-and-out fraud, thievery, everything, and he knew it from the get-go. I'm hoping that these guys are kind of caught up on it and it mushroomed on them, that there was a shortage and then it just kept growing and growing and they weren't for sure what to do and it just got bad. And I also hope that in the next few months they will try to do what's right and they will try to return any funds that they have available and the whole bit. We'll see how this does develop out. They are definitely, they're in the wrong. They've mismanaged, hopefully, that. That's all they've done. It's just mismanaged and misappropriated and just did things because, you know.
Well, this complaint goes beyond mismanagement. This actually uses the word defrauded. And if these guys knew what their financial situation was, that they did not have enough money to pay players back, that they continued to take money from players even though they didn't have that money from the players, they continued to stay in business and pay themselves $444 million at a time when they were not making funds available to players and were mismanaging money by commingling the funds. Frankly, they were paying themselves out of people's deposits. They weren't taking it out of the rake, which is how you make money in the poker business. They were taking it directly out of player deposits, and that is fraud, and that is criminal. And to me, that puts them perhaps on a higher level than Hamilton, because we may see more money involved in this case.
But I disagree with you on that. Is it wrong? Is it fraud? I don't know for sure. These are allegations and the whole bit, and it's a humongous amount of money. But I still think in the back of their mind, they're thinking we have a solvent business here. Actually, in my opinion, it was an insolvent business. But they have a business there that is producing money. They can make this up. They honestly, I think, in the back of their minds, thought they could get this thing and make their company whole again. I absolutely think it was horrible judgment, horrible way they proceeded with it. To allow a phantom fund to grow to $130 million is just ludicrous. I can't even imagine that. How could anybody let it grow to something like that? How could everybody, in the back of their mind, I think they were, well, you know, but once we get this going, once we get through all the ramifications, once we get the processing going, you know, it'll refund itself and away we go and everything will be back kosher. It's ludicrous. It's, you know. So I do not put him on the same level with Russ Hamilton. I'm sorry.
All right. Okay. We got to take a break here, but we will continue to cover this story going forward in the next couple of weeks. I'm sure there will be more developments, and we'll stay on top of the story and keep you posted here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Still to come, John Kim from StackemCoaching.com with a lesson on donk betting, and Vince Van Patten, now in his 10th year on the World Poker Tour. All on the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis, where this Saturday it's the $10,000 double shootout. You can get that $10K just for $200. You buy in, you sit down on a table, you beat your table, boom, you make the final table. You win that final table, you make $10,000. There will be two flights of 50 players each, one at noon, one at 3 p.m., I will be in at least one of those. Hopefully I win the noon and I don't have to play the 3 p.m., but I hope to make the final table again as we did last month. If you want to get in on that, you can register anytime this week or come down here Saturday morning before the noon event starts. For details on that and other tournaments going on here at the Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis, or for more information about the PLO game and other cash games that are played here on a daily basis, you can call 314-770-7600 or go to harrahs.com/STLPoker. This is the Final Table on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on iTunes and thechipleader.com.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8 and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
Granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, coming to you live from the Poker Room of Harrah's St. Louis and from Las Vegas as well. And in just a moment, Vince Van Patten from the World Poker Tour will join us. But first, our poker coaching segment brought to you by StackemCoaching.com, where you can use the promo code FINALTABLE and get a free trial of StackemCoaching.com. Today's coach is John Kim. Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, good. How's it going, guys?
Good. You're going to talk about donk betting today, right?
That's correct. Donk betting, or leading into the pre-flop raiser, pretty much refers to a time when one chooses to bet into the pre-flop raiser. This play accomplishes a few things, but it also opens up to a few pitfalls. Let's look at what we accomplish by leading or donk betting. We can take advantage of boards that hit our range more often than our opponent's range, making him make a mistake when we actually have a weak hand, such as a weak semi-bluff. Also, if our opponent does choose to bluff us, we're able to represent a lot of strength by three-betting as a bluff, often with the intention of getting it all in with a lot of equity, with a strong draw, or a disguised made hand, given that we chose not to check raise. And finally, our opponents have to react to us, and we'll often be the one making a mistake, meaning we're making money in spots where we'd often forfeit the pot or risk more to win it by check raising. The whole idea behind leading is to get an advantage on the boards on which our opponents will often check back for pot control to avoid being check raised. Now let's look at the pitfalls of leading or donk betting. Our checking range becomes weaker and we'll be obviously check folding a lot more flops on connected boards. Also, it's far less likely we'll check raise so our opponents can see bet without fear of being raised off marginal hands. And finally, we'll have to rely on our opponents to play back at our leads when we do have big hands. So it obviously depends on a lot of variables whether you choose to donk bet or take a pot control and check call line. But there is definitely a place in everybody's game to lead or donk bet.
Well, two quick things on that. I think a vital, vital part of doing this particular type of betting is analyzing your opponent and how he's going to respond to it. because if you lead out, if you know how your opponent's going to respond and what kind of a player he is, that makes all the difference in the world there. I also like to dunk bet when I have a semi-bluff, when I have a redraw, when I have something there, but I don't have a damn thing in my hand right now. That's when I like to do it. What do you think of that?
Right, I agree. I that's why I said we want to dunk bet when we have a weak semi-bluffing hand. Something like, for example, queen-jack of spades on like a 10-8-3 flop. I think it's a great spot to just lead out. You might get him to fold a better hand like ace-high, king-high hands or pocket sixes. And also, if he calls, about half the deck can give us a card on the turn to keep betting. Any nine, jack, queen, king, a spade would give us all cards that we can bet again on the turn. So those hands are really great for leading into the preflop raiser.
All right, great stuff. John Kim, one of the coaches you'll find at StackemCoaching.com, where you can listen in on the actual lessons that they give. And by the way, John, we had Christy Gazes on the show as our guest last week. She said great things and that you have helped her no limit game get much, much better in the last year that you've been working with her.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Yeah, Christy is a student of mine, and she's really easy to work with, so a lot of credit goes to her as well.
And you can listen in on some of those lessons that John has been giving Christy by going to StackemCoaching.com right now. Use the promo code FINALTABLE, and you'll get a free trial. Thank you, John.
Thanks, guys.
I want to mention that next week's show, we're going to be talking to Kristen Wilson. She runs a company called Poker Refugees. Dennis, we have talked about players who were online players who don't have a place to play in the U.S. anymore online, and so they've been moving out of the country. Phil Galfond and others have moved to Vancouver, etc. Kristen runs a company called Poker Refugees that helps players who want to move to Canada or Costa Rica or other places, and we'll find out about that business next week. But let's go ahead.
One quick note on that. I just read something. I can't verify myself, but I just read it. The claim is now that 500 people a week are moving out of the U.S. just to play poker. 500 a week.
And there is an impact on the U.S. economy that I would hope that Congress will consider when they do get around to actually doing something about online poker. So anyway, we've got to get to our guest now, Vince Van Patten, who has been with Mike Sexton, the voice of the World Poker Tour, now in its 10th season, the longest-running poker show in television history. There are over 200 shows, and Vince is at one of the WPT events that's going on now in Atlantic City, the Borgata Poker Open. Vince, welcome to the Final Table.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Congratulations on all the success. And let's start off with a simple comparison. 10 years in, how is poker different from your vantage point there, so close to so many final tables?
Well, I've been playing poker, you know, my whole life, and it was a very easy game to win at if you knew something, just anything. And now it isn't. Everyone is very, very good. Everyone's sharp. The big names get knocked out left and right. Guys are hungry and eager, and these are guys that are, you know, they're the ones that are winning. So it's wide open, but it is exciting because anyone can do it.
Have you seen any changes since April 15th? Do you notice anything now that may be just a little bit different than what it was last year?
Changes in the style or play?
No, not necessarily that. The attitude of the players or the size of the field or anything. What has changed since April 15th?
I think more players are eager and excited to be out here. We're at a Borgata right now, Borgata in Atlantic City, and we just had a record 1,313 players put up $3,500 each. So it's a $4.2 million tournament. It's the largest field ever in the history of the World Poker Tour. So it keeps growing, and it's always new faces that are coming in saying, hey, I got in this tournament through a satellite. You know, I'm taking a shot. I'm from here. And there's just people are, you know, just jazzed up about it, and that's what I see. It keeps growing. It keeps getting more and more exciting.
Yeah.
The point I was trying to make is that since April 15th, instead of hurting in something like the WPT or whatever, you guys are growing. 1,300 players out there, the largest field you've ever had, $4.2 million in the prize pool. I mean, that's phenomenal growth.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's, you know, we're on Fox Sports Net TV, and we're on all the time with the number one show with them now, and we went up 30% in the ratings in the last year.
Yep.
So, you know, we made some nice changes on the World Poker Tour. We did some, we're doing some different things that are great, but, and that has a lot, you know, a lot of the reasons. But the people are still enthused to play WPT, so it's all good.
Yeah, now I want to, we'll talk about some of the changes in just a moment, but I'm curious because the WPT event used to be a $10,000 buy-in, or the WPT championship was $25K. Now the standard buy-in, as you said, for this one at the Borgata is $3,500. I think that's great because it opens up the field to a lot of players who couldn't even satellite in to a 10K event. Is that where you're seeing the growth because the buy-ins are so low now, or relatively low compared to where they were before?
Well, you're right. A lot of them still are 10,000, and we still have our 25, of course. But then we, certain casinos said, you know what? We feel that more people would want to play if we drop down the price. What do you think about that? And so, you know, we all agreed, hey, that's a good idea. Why not let people get in? Especially during these hard times. There's a recession going on and all that. So it is good, and we're also doing a re-entry thing. So you not get knocked out the first day, you can come back the second day, day 2A, 2B. And, or 1B, and come in again. And that, people love that because you have two shots now in the tournament. So it's a combination of things. But I think it's good to lower the price a little bit, let people get in. If you're going to get lucky, you can still do it, and you can still, you know, win a lot of money.
Yeah. So what do you have that's new? What do you have that's new on this season?
Well, season 10, you know, we have, the Royal Flush Girls are now with us, who are fantastic. For the last year, they've been with us, and there's six gorgeous girls that just travel with the World Poker Tour and meet all the players, and they're just hanging out with us, and so they're a great addition. I think people like to watch them and talk to them, and along with that, we have Tony Dunst, who is a, you know, terrific online player, and he does a thing called the Raw Deal, and he sort of, we break away every once in a while, and Mike and I go, you know, Tony, what do you have to think about that hand? What do you say about that hand? And he gives a little more outrageous view of it. You know, he you know, won't pull any punches. Sometimes we do, you know.
Yeah.
So he's fun to have with it. And then Kimberly Lansing's our hostess of the event. And just the set is good, is terrific. And we have the Royal Flush Bar at the, on the show now that's in the background. And the Royal Flush Girls are sitting at the bar and people come up to them. So the new shows air next, I think, February. But they're very good. It's better than ever. And producing-wise, it's just it's becoming a better and better show.
And I know that Tony, who we had on this summer when we were at the Rio, we sat down with him. In fact, we've had him on a couple times in the last year. I love the Raw Deal segment, and I said that he was going to be one of the breakout stars of Poker TV. And now the WPT is using Tony to do live streaming of your final table. So, you know, months before the broadcast with you and Mike will air, Tony's online doing the live streaming. What effect do you think all of this live streaming, it's not just the WPT, but the EPT and the World Series did it this summer, what effect do you think that is having on poker and players?
I'm not sure yet. I mean, we're doing it. I'm not sure if people are really excited about it or not. I haven't heard the feedback completely, but they say they like what they're doing, and Tony does a good job with that. And, you know, would I watch a live stream? Maybe. I don't know yet. You know, it's just you're watching every hand. So the verdict's not out yet, but we're doing it, and it seems like it's going to be popular.
Well, there's a big difference. The Poker Stars, the one at the PCA where they did, they separated totally the final table, isolated them from everybody else so there could be no communication, and then they did the 30-minute delay and let everybody out there, even the people in the Bahamas, in the Atlantis, view what was going on at that final table. Didn't do that at the World Series, and big, big difference. Do you see an advantage to players being able to see what cards the person had 30 minutes prior, to see whether he was bluffing or not, to see what kind of a bet he would make with a particular hand?
You mean if they could get back and sort of review that somehow?
Somebody is,
you know, I think it's a slight advantage, but everyone knows. Eventually, everyone makes moves. Everybody plays a certain way. So I don't think there's a big advantage there if they're tipped off. Hey, an hour before, this guy did this and this. I don't think that's that big of an advantage, personally. What do you guys think of it? Do you like it?
I actually don't like it that well. I like it being separated the way that the Stars did it, where there'd be no communication to the players. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I didn't like the idea of whole cards to start with when they were doing it years ago, and obviously I've been proven wrong on that.
Well, without whole cards, Vince has no job.
Oh, by the way, when we first started out on the World Poker Tour, you know, a lot of the top pros didn't want us. They didn't like it. I remember Daniel Negreanu and Andy Duke, they were both shaking their heads saying, no, this isn't going to work, and we don't want to give away our hands and blah, blah, blah. The show came out the first day, and everybody was kind of excited. There was a big buzz, you know. Oh, the show looks great, and people seem to be buzzing about it. And I saw Annie and Daniel, they're walking down the hallway, and they're still shaking their head. They go, no, it's not good. No, God, the sky's falling. It's never going to work. But, you know, and then 3 months later, you know, they finally got it, that this was going to make them big stars. So it just goes to show you just don't know what's going to work. But there's always new innovations in poker, so you got to keep trying them.
Yeah, I think the same is going to be true of the streaming. You know, people are going to get used to the fact that you could be at a final table and a half hour later somebody could tweet you information about what your opponent did, whether he bluffed you or made a move or whether he had the goods in a certain hand. I think that that's going to be standard, and, you know, 10 years from now, we'll look back on that and go, I can't believe people were worried about that, just as we do from the first days of the WPT.
There you go. That's great. I agree with that, yeah.
Now, Vince, I do have a bone to pick with you about something, and I've mentioned it on this show a couple of times.
Beautiful.
I think you are singularly responsible for poker players worldwide overplaying ace-king. Because when we see a player with ace-king on the WPT, you get so excited. Oh, he's got big slick. He's got the monster. He's got, yeah. I mean, you don't treat it the way somebody does when they've got American Airlines, when they've got a pair of pocket aces there. But you get so excited about ace-king that I see players in cash games and particularly in tournaments getting their entire stack in with ace-king, even in situations where they should have been making better decisions. I blame you, Vince.
You're so right. I'll take the blame for you. You're absolutely correct. I never thought about it until you said it. But here's the thing. I just like saying big slick. You know, he's got big slick. That's a big thing to say he has got. So you're right. I'm overhyping it. We know it's not that big of a hand. You're so correct. But what are you going to do? You should have talked to me about this 8 years ago. I would have shut up.
Well, don't do it this season.
I will not. I will never say that again. I'm going to be very casual. Oh, he's got big slick. You know, he's got, you know, big slick's okay. That's it. You're right.
At least I can say that it's never bothered me in a tournament, right?
What's that?
Big slick. Have an ace king or something like that. At least it's never bothered me in a tournament, right, Paul?
Yeah, Vince, Dennis and I actually have a prop bet going on because he's been knocked out of some big tournaments, including the main event in 2009 after he made his run to third place in 08. He got knocked out in 45th place in 09 with ace-king versus ace-king and the other guy four-flushed.
Oh,
and then there were a couple of other times that happened to him, and it happened to me in a couple of tournaments. Since then, we've had a prop bet between the two of us for quite a bit of money that if you call off your stack with ace-king and get knocked out of a tournament, you owe the other guy a lot of money. And neither of us has had to pay it. So we've learned the lesson, Vince, and now you need to teach it to the rest of the world.
All right, I'm on it. I agree with you guys.
Okay. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, this is not a bone to pick, what was it like for you watching Mike make the final table at Bay 101 last season? How exciting was that?
I honestly think it was one of the most exciting things in my 10 years on the World Poker Tour, because always rooting for him, and we played a lot of cards together in the last 15 years, and so it was great to see my buddy only takes like 5 or 6 shots on the World Poker Tour, cashes 3 times, and then to make the final table. Very, very proud of him. He's a great player. People have forgotten a little bit because they didn't see him out there. We weren't allowed to play for the first 9 years, so it was thrilling. It was absolutely thrilling, and it's good for him. You know, he's a Hall of Famer, and he got a bad beat by Matusow, but that's the way it goes. But believe me, Mike really wants to go after it this year and make some big, big final tables again. He's very aggressive, and, you know, I think he'll do it.
How about you? Are you playing?
Well, I love it. Just not finding the time to do it. I'm going to pick my spots. I'll start playing a little bit again. I put main event World Series every year for the last 20 years, and last year I made the money. I picked up about $30,000, played bad to get knocked out, but whatever. You know, I don't love tournament poker as much. I don't have the patience to sit there, if you get lucky enough to sit there for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days, you know. So it's not my cup of tea. I kind of like cash games. So I'll find out. A few spots I'd like to play, but we'll see.
Well, hey, congratulations on Main Event Cash. I think Mike would love to see you at a final table, and he'd be able to broadcast with you sitting there.
I know. That would be great.
That would be pretty awesome, I'll have to admit. Got a question. Most people don't realize that you did an awful lot of TV and everything in your younger days after you got done with your tennis playing. I got a question for you. Did you ever see Lauren Green without his toupee?
Oh, my God. Lauren Green without the toupee? No, no, that's right. I think he passed away, though, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
He's dead. Okay, but he was great. You know, I did three Bonanzas. I was a kid actor, and I was an adult actor in through my 20s, and still act, you know. But anyway, I did three Bonanzas, and it was a privilege to do that classic show. But you're right, and it was always, you know, they make fun because he was the father and the three sons, and, you know, what were they doing out in that those corrals, you know, four guys, you know, middle-aged guys. They were great. They were great to work with.
When did you start actually playing poker? I heard a story that it was your dad who taught you when you were a kid.
Yeah. My father's a degenerate gambler, and he was an excellent poker player until he started making money on Eight Is Enough. And then he played horrible. Then he started playing bad. But he taught me really, you know, how to play, and I was playing when I was 15 in his games, and they were pretty big-sized games in California. And I was doing very, very well. In fact, I love poker so much that I had a fake beard and mustache made up so that I can get into Gardena games in California. You had to be 21. And I used to stick this thing on, drive down there when I was 16 with my own, you know, with my car, and stick this thing on with gum, and I would play. And you had to deal back then, too. And I'd be playing in these games in Gardena until I was finally 21. But, yeah, I love the game and been playing my whole life.
What were the games you played back then, and what do you play now in your home games?
Well, back then at Gardena, it was just draw poker. It was just draw high, which I liked. And the home games, I played everything. Everything. We played every mixed pot, everything you can imagine. But I eventually, you know, my favorite game is pot limit hold'em. That turned out to be my best game. I enjoy that the most. And, yeah, actually, the one I really like is pineapple. Throw away one card after the flop. And that's my favorite game. You guys know that game.
Yeah.
That's what I enjoy the
unfortunately,
most.
Unfortunately, I know that game. Yeah. That's your favorite game? Oh, my God.
That is. It's my best game because I think guys don't really know how to play it. They don't know what to throw away. They overrate their hands a little bit, so I have a little edge there. But I also was good because I could negotiate at the table. I used to be better in cash games because I would make deals, any kind of deal, and I was very good at doing that. And
what kind of deals are you talking about? What do you mean?
Well, you know, you go all in, and if the guy, you know, winds up calling, I'll go, look, you know, I'll give you one-third of the pot back if you want because I feel bad for you, you know. You do that type of thing. And, you know, I could usually con, you know, they didn't know so well. I'd make great deals when I had nothing. So I used to make better deals in the cash games. Now you can't do it. Now everybody's hip to, you can't make a deal. You can't have cash on the table. You can't do this. You can't do that. So my game is restricted, and my psychology behind that has been disrupted a little bit.
I played a charity tournament here this last weekend with Brad Garrett and Ray Romano and some of the other guys, and they have a home game out there in California, too. It seems like everybody's playing a home game out there in California. Do you play with any of those guys? Anybody we know that you play with on a weekly basis? Or maybe you don't want to disclose their names.
Well, I used to play, you know, in every game that was a Hollywood game, and over the years, like Don Adams from Get Smart and Gabe Kaplan, and my father. And then over the years, you know, I sort of created the game with you know, the big game with brought Mike Sexton in and Tobey Maguire and Ben Affleck. I was in that game for a long, long time and had a good time in that game. And then I sort of, it's evolved to another game. They're playing, and now it's getting too big for me, so I'm not playing that. But over the years, you know, some very good actors, celebrities have been good, solid players.
Yeah, I don't want you to give away too much here, but what kind of stakes are we talking about? Are we talking about a 5-10 game, a 25-50 game, a 100-200 game?
Well, you know, there was no limit. There was playing no limit, and they were big over my head for sure. So I had to play pretty tight.
Who amongst those guys would qualify as a really, really good player?
Well, I think, you know, Ben Affleck's the best. I think he is the best out of all the celebrities. He, you know, he's legitimate. If he needed to do it, he'd be one of the top players for sure. He obviously doesn't need it, so. Yeah. He's good. Jimmy Woods plays a nice solid game. Talks a little too much, you know, tells about his bad beats a little too much, but he's tough at the table. He's a good guy, and he's fun to play with, and he's an excellent player.
Yeah. Brad Garrett said that Ray Romano complains when he loses $3, so.
Now, I have never played with either. I've seen them at tournaments, but I've never played with either one. I'd love to, but they don't invite me to the game in Malibu. But what are you going to do? You know. But I hear they got to be pretty good. How were they?
They're excellent guys. They really are. Brad is a riot. I went back to the green room down here at his comedy club. And by the way, just as a quick plug, he's got a comedy club at the Tropicana here in Vegas, and it's awesome. I was down there on Friday night. Deneen and I went down there and had a blast. So just a little plug for him on that.
They are funny guys, no doubt.
He's a funny guy. He's a great guy.
Usually, I'm going to make a basic, I'll just throw this out there. Usually I find that celebrities that are comedians are not good poker players. All right? Take it for what it's worth. I've never seen a good comedian be good at the poker table. So there you go, Brad Garrett. What are you going to do?
Before I let you go, you mentioned James Woods. I've got to tell one quick story. You and I actually have played poker together, Vince, about 10 years ago. I was at the Mirage playing in a 40-80 limit game, and you were waiting to get into, I think, a 100-200 limit game. And while you couldn't get that game going, you came over and sat down at the table that I was at, and Jimmy Woods was with you. And you and I were on opposite sides of the table, and we got involved in a hand, and I check-raised you either on the flop or on the turn, and you showed your cards to Woods, who was standing at the rail behind you, and you mucked him. And Woods said, "I can't believe you're not calling." And you said to him, "Jimmy, you call him. That way I can get your money later."
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
what a great story. Did you have good? Did you have me beat?
Yeah, I did.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
And somewhere I have 120 of Vince Van Patten's dollars. Well, listen, we really appreciate your time today. We congratulate you and Mike and the whole WPT team and everybody who's new members of it for your 10th season. More than 200 shows on TV is a landmark by anybody's yardstick, and we're fans of the stuff that you guys do on Fox Sports Net every Sunday night. It airs at 11 o'clock Central Time here on Fox Sports Midwest, and have a great time in Atlantic City, and continued good luck to you.
Thanks. So great to talk to you both. That was fun.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Vince Van Patten joining us live from the Borgata Poker Open here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show. That's a true story, Dennis, by the way. Woods wanted him to make the call, and Vince made the laydown, and it was a good laydown on his part. I think I flopped a set.
And you're saying, listen to him. Put your money out here.
All right, a very packed show today. We have a lot of other stuff that we did not have time to get to, but you know what? We've got another show next Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock live here on 5 Night of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. And next week we'll be joined, as I mentioned earlier, by Kristen Wilson from Poker Refugees. Thanks to our sponsors, Harrah's St. Louis, where we're about to start up the PLO game here at this very table. And also thanks to StackhamCoaching.com and Homestead Financial Mortgage for great rates. Call 800-GRANNY-8. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. This is the Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on iTunes and thechipleader.com.